essentially, it's about educating the client and giving them the right advice. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today we are looking at proposals and contracts. Now, a few weeks ago, I ran a Facebook Live Q&A, and we will be doing another one of those soon. But one of the questions that came up as part of the Q&A was, well, specifically surrounding contracts. But actually, our contract is kind of built into our proposal. So I thought it would just be a great idea to run through the process and the formula by which we put together our proposals and likewise then our contracts. So I've pulled a proposal up on screen and I will simply talk you through it. The first thing that we do is we try and make our proposals resonate with the client. So we have placeholders within the proposal where we can actually drop the client's logo. So that will be, there's one on the cover, quite a big one on the cover, right next to ours. And then there's a little one in the footer that goes right throughout our proposal documents. And I know it's really a small thing, and you can obviously design your proposals exactly however the heck you want, but we have actually been commented that by personalizing our proposals in that way and actually including the client's logo within our own proposal right from the start, we're giving the impression that, you know what, we want to work with you, we want to work together, and we want to collaborate. So that's the front cover, and that includes the date and the reference and the title of the proposal and that kind of thing. The cover's quite simple, but the key thing is it includes both of our logos. We then move on to a letter, and we start every proposal with a letter to the client. And frankly, not enough letters get written these days. Everything's email, everything's PDF, everything's, you know, wham bam, thank you ma'am, and sign on the dotted line. And we start with a letter. And the first thing we do in that letter at the very start of every proposal is we thank the client for giving us the opportunity to write this proposal. Without us writing proposals, we don't get business, and without the business, we don't have the business that we enjoy and the lifestyle that we have. So we want to start right from the word go by thanking the client for the opportunity to do this. And then we just give a few sentences. It's not a letter that's long. They're normally maybe 4, 5, 6 paragraphs, and each paragraph probably only has a couple of sentences in. But it's a means of setting the scene about what the client is going to find in the document. We then have a page called the snapshot, and the snapshot is limited to one page of the proposal, and it is a very quick overview about what we have, what we will be covering. You know, the more of the specifics to do with the project. The snapshot will cover things like any requests that the client has made, whether it's a new website that we're doing or a digital marketing retainer or something like that, the format of the work, and also a quick overview of who or why this has come about, why this proposal is happening. And 9 times out of 10, it says something along the lines of XYZ client was put in touch with So Digital Communications, or So Digital Communications contacted XYZ client upon the recommendation of who knows, different party, and this proposal has been prepared in response to that connection. So it even goes down into the granular level about, okay, so how did we get here? We then have a section that follows that called business needs, and this is where we identify what the outcomes are from the client's perspective. So it may be that the business needs more sales. It may be that it needs a new website to help with organic search position. It might be that they want a digital marketing retainer to help nurture leads through a new funnel process. Whatever it might be, we look at the business needs and identify what the delivery of this project is going to do to address those needs. We then move on to a section called the brief. Now, The brief, by this point, the stages can, the sections, sorry, of the proposal can start to get a little bit longer, and some of them do now start to run over a number of pages. We've gone through the very quick, high-level overview stuff, and we're on to, right, the meat of what we're getting into. And the reason we include the brief back to the client in our proposal is largely because the clients that we work with don't build websites every day. They don't do digital marketing stuff every day. They might have a marketer on their team, they might have a designer on their team, but for whatever reason, they don't have the skill sets in-house to deliver what they're asking us to do. So they have relayed a brief to us, and we need to ascertain that we have interpreted that correctly. So we put their brief into our words in our proposal, so if there's anything that's not right, they can come back to us and say, you know what, we didn't quite mean this, or we didn't quite mean that, or, you know, can you just change this around, because actually that wouldn't work for us. And we're presenting their brief back to them. We then present, after the brief, we present the solution. And this is normally a bullet point list that identifies all of the points in the brief that we've just mentioned, and also includes details of how the solution will address the business needs. So, for example, the brief may suggest that they want a website to work in a particular way, and we can then put down in the solution that, you know, we understand that the brief says this and the business needs are that, and actually we would propose a solution that works maybe slightly differently to the way that the client has requested, but because it has the emphasis on achieving those business needs. And at the end of the day, it's their business needs that are the key focus, the key goal in the delivery of this project. The brief, of course, has a lot of weight to it, but if there's a better way that we know of achieving those basic business needs, this is the time we get to present it to the client. So we have this section called the solution, and then that also has sort of a subsection within it a bit later on, which is the specification. And that's where we then start to take these high-level ideas, these high-level ideals, and break it down into, right, so this is what we are going to deliver. What is the platform? What is the URL that it's going to be on? Where's it going to be hosted? Who's doing the design? What's the design specification if we're doing it? Who's doing the development? What's the development specification? Who is responsible for population? Now, on a website, that is a very key piece of information to put in. Largely, we don't deliver fully populated websites. And the reason for that is that we want the client to be involved in the population process. For starters, we're not experts in their industry, so we can put any baloney into a website and actually have no idea if it's right or if it's wrong. The second thing is, if we deliver a fully populated website to a client, and they say, thank you very much, and then we push it live, and we train them on that website, what normally happens is that the client then doesn't log into their website for, I don't know, somewhere between 1 and 3 months. And in that period of time, they forget how the website works. So the most we will do is partially populate a website, or populate the copy that's provided onto a website, but then it becomes the client's responsibility at a minimum to do the copywriting and the author's corrections. So we are making them use the admin panel, we are making them use the system, so that by the time the website goes live, they've had some experience of using their website in an environment where, you know what, if they stuff something up, it doesn't actually matter all that much. We can always reset it, we can go in, we can fix something, and it's not affecting their live website. We also, within the specification, detail the timescales for delivery for the project. Some of that may be, you know, if it's a website project, a one-off, we'll then go and say, right, well, you know, it's an eight-week rollout, and these are the milestones. Or if it's an ongoing retainer, we'll give normally the breakdown of sort of the first 3 to 6 months kind of work, with then details of the ongoing arrangement thereafter. The final thing we have in the specification is the main contact points on both sides. So who's the main contact at the client and who is the main contact in our agency, so that right from the outset, we've identified the personnel that are going to be responsible for the delivery of the project on both sides. We then go a little bit further into detailing our process. So we have different versions of the process. And if you're a member of Lee Jackson's Agency Trailblazer community, I actually did a workshop about our process for delivering a website project. We have different versions of the process for website projects, for branding projects, and for digital marketing retainers. So there's a section of the website, of the proposal, which we can pull in from different places, but they're kind of formulated or pre-written so that these sections largely don't change. They include details to do with the planning, design, creative, development, the different services we offer in terms of digital marketing, so SEO, content creation, social media management, hosting, all of that kind of stuff. It all goes into the process part of the proposal. And the idea is that by reading these two or three pages within the document, we do try and keep them as short as we possibly can, but by reading these few pages in the document, the client starts to get a sense of what it's going to be like to work with us. So, for example, if we're delivering a website project, our process document actually says when it gets to development, we are going to go quiet on you at this point, but don't worry, we are working hard to get your website built in the, you know, up to the highest standard using the latest technologies, etc., etc. But that takes us some time, so we will go quiet, and you can use this time to finalize your content. So we're actually trying to manage the client's expectations even before the project has been awarded to us. That, you know what, there's going to be periods of time when you're going to have more intense communication with us, and there's going to be other periods of time where that level of communication actually drops back a bit. But that's okay. That's the way the process works. If we're working on a monthly agreement with somebody, then we'll maybe identify what the sort of standard rhythm of our monthly agreements are. So you will have an account manager. This account manager will arrange a meeting stroke conference call with you at a minimum of once a month, and then we work on a quarterly target and a six-monthly target. So we're already starting to set the rhythm for how we are going to roll out the end project. We then get on to the pricing section, or the pricing specification. Now, of course, I'm fully aware that 9 out of 10 clients that receive proposals from us, they flick to this page first, and then, you know, may or may not read the rest of it. But the pricing specification follows the process. So any section that we have highlighted as part of our process gets a costing next to it. So the client can see where the value is, where the added value is, and actually what the cost is of just us sitting down and doing the work for them. We've tried doing this in many different ways. We've tried to use sort of tick lists. We've tried to use even just stripping it right back, so we don't specify what each individual component part is, but we just give, to deliver this, it would be X amount of money. And we've had very mixed reviews about the different approaches we've taken. So we've settled on this one where, as I say, the process matches the pricing, and then it's easier for people to see, right, so as I say, this is where the value is, this is just getting on doing some work. We can see how the price has been built. There's a sort of psychology to pricing, and we're trying to make our pricing as transparent as possible so the client understands where we're coming from. There's a whole debate about whether to use a time-based model or a value-based model. To be perfectly frank, in our agency, we still have elements of it where we're working on a time-based model. And this isn't the place where I want to get into the discussion about value-based pricing or time for money or that kind of thing. We do use some value-based stuff, but we also use some time-based stuff. And we use a mixture of each, and we have our own reasons for doing that. The pricing section then also stipulates two other things. One is if there's hosting to be involved, what the hosting costs would be. And the second thing is the schedule for payment. Now, this, we have different models for payments depending on the overall value of a project. If it's a monthly retainer with us, then it is a monthly fee that is payable by direct debit, and we do not shift on the direct debit. We are committing our regular resource to your account. Therefore, we want payment on a particular day of the month. You will receive your invoice. We want payment. We don't want to be wasting our time chasing unpaid invoices. That is not what your digital marketing retainer is for. So that is unnegotiable, non-negotiable. When it comes to a project, we specify what percentage is the deposit, what percentage is due maybe when the artwork's approved, what percentage is due when development's complete, and then if there's a final payment that's due when the website's live, that's detailed in there as well. To be honest, we're starting to move away from a payment upon live. Maybe the hosting starts on live, but the problem we're trying to negate is that we can do all of our work, and let's say there's 30% left for the live date, and then the client decides to go on a holiday or they have an issue, and it takes them another 12 months to populate the website or to finish the population after they've been trained. We shouldn't actually really be waiting that long. Our cash flow shouldn't be determined about the availability of the client. So we're starting to rein that one back in, and normally the last payment is upon either completion of development or delivery of training, whichever comes last. But that's an element that we're in charge of, so we can still dictate our own cash flow when it comes to that. So there's details of the schedules of payment and any hosting. If the proposal is then to do with a one-off project, an ad hoc project, we then also give details of our ongoing services. So it's simply a page that details the other things that we can do and some of the benefits. There's some bullet points on there. So for example, ongoing website maintenance and care plans, SEO services, content writing, etc., etc. So they are there. So even if the project doesn't include these things, we are informing the client, we're starting to educate the client at this point that an ad hoc project, a new website, isn't the finished product. That's the end of the beginning. You then need to make this new website work for you, and we have the skills to do that. So we're using it, to be perfectly frank, nobody has ever accepted a proposal from us and then in the conversation at the end has then said, oh, by the way, we see that you do content creation as well and some SEO. We'd like to sign up for that at this point. But actually, it's about educating the client and giving them the right advice. So we are setting their expectation. And then when we get to the other end of the project and we're pushing the website live and we can say, now we'd like to talk to you about our content creation and SEO, they've already got a reference point right back from when we first met with the client that this is what we're going to be talking about. This is how you make your website work for you. And then there's two final sections to a proposal, and I realize I've taken a few minutes to go through this, but there's two final sections. One is the project agreement. Now that's the bit that forms the contract, and then it is followed by our terms of business. Now the project agreement, we still work on an online system where tick to accept agreements kind of thing. We do accept photos of the signed agreement page of a proposal, but actually we still find that this is by far the easiest way of doing it. People are able to type and click into the PDF, so they can do it all on their computer. They don't have to they don't necessarily have to print it off, although a lot of clients do prefer just to print it off, that one page, fill it in, and as they take a photo on their phone and send it back to us. The key parts of the project agreement, however, are, firstly, it includes the proposal reference, which is on the front cover. So that reference comes all the way through the document. It is tied to the brief, it is tied to the solution, it is tied to the pricing, and it is then on the project agreement. Of course, if any part of that changes, the project agreement then changes alongside it. We then have a series of tick boxes And the very first one is, I understand and agree to the terms and conditions detailed in this proposal. And the terms and conditions are on the next page, so I'll get to those in a second. The project agreement, I should add, is normally the penultimate page of the document. We then have tick boxes for each of the payment items. So for example, I agree to pay So Digital Communications X amount of money for the completion of project proposal reference 123 XYZ based on the schedule that is detailed in this proposal. So we are once again mentioning the schedule. Now, if they've got different recurring services, there is then a different tick box for each of those services. So basically, each thing that we're going to itemize on an invoice to them has a tick box of its own merit, and that just allows us to say, you know, some proposals may include multiple options, and a client may say, you know what, I want to go for two of those, but I don't want to go for the third one. So we give them the ability on the project agreement to tick the services that they wish to accept, and then off we go. We don't then have to mess about with different project agreements and different values, etc., etc. There's also details of the direct debits on there and the payment terms. So we work on a 14-day payment term on invoice, and we work on a direct debit whereby we'll issue the invoice on the first of the month and payment is deducted on the 10th. So both ways, we are giving details about when payment is expected. With recurring projects or recurring agreements, we're also detailing, firstly, what's the minimum commitment, and secondly, what then happens when that commitment is reached. So our proposals or our retainers work on the basis of, well, this is a minimum of a 6-month or a 12-month minimum commitment, and then we move to month-by-month rolling, or we then renew to another 6 or 12 months. So we've detailed that again on the project agreement. It sounds like a lot of content all on one page, but you know what, we've got it down to some snappy little bullet points, and it actually looks quite good. The final thing that is right at the bottom, there's another tick box before somebody signs their name and gives their address, the billing address and details, etc. And the final one says, I understand that any further changes to the structure, objectives or content of this proposal may result in the delay of the final completion and could result in additional charges. I should also mention that back up in the pricing specification, there's a bullet point or a side note that details what our standard hourly rate is. So should the client then request sort of additional ad hoc work, we've already built that in, that, you know, anything over and above, you will be billed at this rate, and that's non-negotiable. So that's the agreement. And then the very final page, and we worked really hard as a team and with some legal advice to get our terms of business, our T's and C's, onto one sheet of A4. Granted, we've had to reduce the point size a little bit, but it's all there and it's all legible. And there's different sections to do with the appointment of us, the services that we're offering, intellectual property, the charges that we're making, payments, liabilities, and then there's a final sort of miscellaneous section called general. So the client has to agree to all of that in order to raise a project with us. And we will not do any work on any project until we've received an agreement form and the deposit has cleared, if there's a deposit payment necessary. So we're very clear about the two things that we need in place before we're going to start any work. If it's a retained agreement, then it's the signed agreement and the direct debit has been put in place. So that's there. You know, that there's normally two things, one that's the contract based and the other's finance based element that we need before we even before we start work. And that's the way our proposals work. So the final thing for us to do with any contract or proposal is to deliver it to the client. Now, we do sometimes get a little bit old school with this. We work with clients right across the globe, and 9 times out of 10 we email them a PDF of the proposal. But what we try and do as much as we possibly can is actually arrange either a physical meeting or a conference call to present the proposal to them. Now, we don't read it to them. We don't do it word for word. It's normally a meeting or a call that has It follows the same structure as the proposal, but it's far more conversational. We're relaying the key points back to them. And then, of course, we then do give them time to read it and to come back with any questions at the other end. But we've found that if we just sort of willy-nilly send off an email with a proposal in it, that we get a far higher bounce or rejection rate of that proposal than if we actually spend some time with the client. It's worth us investing another half an hour, 40 minutes to go through things with the client and explain a bit more about what we do. There's some things that we can say, and there's the personality of meeting with somebody, even if that's online through a video chat, that sort of says a lot more than you can get on the page. So there's things that we'll mention when we're doing this in the presentation where that we won't have included in the proposal. Largely more details around our process and the detail of what we're going to do, etc., etc. We've included all the fundamentals and all the key points in the proposal, but there's just extra stuff we can tell the client. And you know what? It's a good way of educating them. It makes them feel a lot more engaged in the process, and ultimately by investing that 30 to 40 minutes extra in the delivery of the proposal, we see a far higher conversion rate and therefore far more contracts coming our way, and that helps our agency to grow. So I really hope that that's sort of answered the questions that I received through the Q&A about the contracts that we put together and how we approach it. And also, I suppose, a bit of added stuff to do with the proposals that we write. But as I say, because our proposals are so interlocked with the contracts, or the contracts are interlocked with the proposals, whichever way around you want to look at it, I just wanted to give the overview of how we do it. So I really hope that's been useful. If you've got any queries, you can obviously find me in the Marketing Development Group on Facebook, which you can find at peteeverett.com/group. And if you're enjoying this podcast and there's other people that you know that may benefit from it, please feel free to share it, or I don't know, tag them something in the group, invite them to it, or drop me a DM and we can sort that out. But we'd really like to build this audience and this community into a safe place that marketers and marketing professionals can bounce ideas around, ask the questions that they're burning to ask, and get them answered in a safe environment. So dive back into the group. I'd love to see you there, and we'll see you next time.